This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And other special web-only programs. On the homepage, under the tab Latest Audio, you'll find an interview with the Manhattan Transfer, a 1983 speech by Gloria Martin, one of the founders of Radical Women, an interview about the Merry Meet Gathering, and more. That's KBOO.fm under Latest Audio. Thanks for listening.
Our listeners in Corvallis and Albany will be happy to hear that we have replaced the failed translator and installed a brand new translator. KBOO's new frequency for Corvallis, Albany, and Philomath is 104.3.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look this morning on KBOO. I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. Our topic today is the Guantanamo Bay Prison Camp. Will it ever close? My guest today is Andy Worthington. He's a journalist and author based in London. His most recent book is The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison. It's the definitive source on the men who've been locked up in Guantanamo. Thoroughly researched, you can read the real stories of these men and how they ended up in our prison camp. The American government has called these men the worst of the worst. In the book, you'll learn that they're far from that, many of them not even engaged in any form of warfare, but just scooped up in the midst of our run to go into Afghanistan. He's also the co-director of the documentary film Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo. Thanks for joining me, Andy.
Hey, hello, Linda. It's very nice to talk to you again.
Yes,
sorry that it's about the continued existence of Guantanamo, but we can't have everything.
I know. I want to talk to you about surveillance in London as well. You know how important that topic is here, so we'll get to that some other time. But let's start out by talking about the current hunger strike that's going on in Guantanamo Bay. Bring us up to date on how long it's been going on, who's participating, et cetera.
Well, I think we're on something like day 128 now of essentially a prison-wide hunger strike. It began on February the 6th. It was immediately precipitated by aggressive cell searches that had been initiated by the person who was in charge of the guards who came to that position last year. They were basically taking away privileged information between letters between the prisoners and their lawyers, all kinds of personal items, and they were also, the prisoners believed, manhandling their copies of the Quran, which upset them. But, you know, what was underlying it all and what certainly become much more dominant as time has gone on is that these men were very understandably in despair. You know, over half of them had been cleared for release to the prison by a task force that President Obama established when he first took office in 2009, and yet they're all still held. Other men were supposed to be put on trial, but for most of them that hasn't happened. Some of them were designated for indefinite detention without charge or trial. Terrible thing for President Obama to do, but he did that in an executive order 2 years ago for 46 of the men still held. On the basis that they're too dangerous to release, but the evidence against them can't be used in a court of law. In other words, that's not really evidence. But when he initiated this executive order, he promised there would be reviews of their cases to find out whether they should still be held, and those haven't happened. So they've been abandoned by the president, who promised to close the prison, abandoned by Congress, where lawmakers have done all they can to stop any prisoners from being released and the prison being closed. And also abandoned by parts of the judiciary. So, you know, it's very understandable why they resorted to a hunger strike, a desperate thing to do, to draw the attention of the world to their plight. And I think to that extent they succeeded.
You know, and I think they have drawn the attention of the world. And, you know, Andy, I have here off your site at andyworthington.co.uk, or no, .uk.co. Anyway, Andy Worthington, just look it in Google. You can come directly to his site. But this is a letter from one of the hunger strikers in the naval base there, who a letter to his doctors. And if you're patient with me, I'm going to read a little bit of it, because I think it speaks eloquently to what you were just saying.
Sure.
So it starts out, "Dear doctor, I do not wish to die, but I'm prepared to run that risk that I may end up doing so, because I am protesting the fact that I've been locked up for more than a decade without a trial, subjected to inhuman and degrading treatment, and denied access to justice. I have no other way to get my message across. You know the authorities have taken everything from me. I am respectfully requesting that an independent medical professional be allowed into Guantanamo to treat me, and that they be given full access to my medical records in order to determine the best treatment for me. You claim to be acting according to your duties as a physician to save my life. This is against my expressed wish, and you, as you know, I am competent to make my own decisions about medical treatment. When I try to refuse the treatment you offer, you force them upon me, sometimes violently. For these reasons, you're in violation of the ethics of your profession, as an American Medical Association and the World Medical Association have made clear." He goes on later to say, "You know, I have some sympathy for your impossible position. You will have to live with what you have done and not done here at Guantanamo for the rest of your life." There's much more to the letter, and as I said, you can locate it on Andy Worthington's website. I think that speaks really clearly to the desperation and yet the clear thinking that's behind this hunger strike.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think that was a very eloquent letter, which I believe was written by a number of the prisoners.
Yeah, I think it was 13 prisoners, actually.
That's right, yeah. And of course, you know, I think yesterday the news broke that there was a short article in the New England Journal of Medicine by three medical professors at Boston University calling on the medical staff at Guantanamo not to take part in the force feeding of the prisoners. You know, and it's a horrible situation. But I think, you know, it's important, obviously, to understand that what they're doing at Guantanamo is A, trying to keep order in the prison. So that's why they've, you know, locked everybody down in solitary, even though before the hunger strike, many of the men were allowed to mingle freely in the daytime.
There were articles in the paper at that time, Andy, when they began this crackdown, that the prisoners actually physically fought back when they attempted to keep them from meeting communally.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows exactly where the truth is? They may have resisted, or it may just be that actually the military just you know, clamped down and made sure that they were restoring order in the prison. Now, you know, also force-feeding prisoners, however ethically wrong it is obviously what's going to happen rather than the authorities letting anyone die in Guantanamo. The irony is that, you know, they don't think that their lives are worth living, but they're not allowing them to die.
International law is very clear that force-feeding people on a hunger strike is considered, I think it's considered torture. It's a war crime.
Well, absolutely, you know. And you know, but what I think really, Linda, is that, you know, we must constantly focus on the political side of this, that decisions about Guantanamo, operationally, it may be made within Guantanamo, but the existence of the prison is the responsibility primarily of the President of the United States and of the United States Congress. And it's there that we are looking and must keep pressure on to try and resolve this situation. The only way that I think it can be resolved, and I think the prisoners agree on this, is that there must be action and there must be the release of these men who were told many years ago that the United States government no longer wanted to carry on holding them, but are there because they've become part of a disgraceful game of political football, essentially.
Yes. Well, let's get on to talking. We can talk about the late President Obama's speech on May 23rd, where he seemed to be once again reiterating his desire to close Guantanamo. I did want to say, though, I read some more about the conditions and what prisoners are reporting that's going on in Guantanamo almost on a daily basis, and that is they are being bodily searched. Some prisoners are refusing to talk to their attorneys because they go through such a violent physical body search to go to the telephone. It's believed that they're using these kinds of techniques to keep people from wanting to go to the telephone. And they did try to reduce any commercial flights into Guantanamo so that attorneys, I think they did it so that attorneys would have much less access directly to their clients. So they're working hard to really isolate these men more than they've been before. And I think that's important to hear because that's going simultaneously, I hear, even worse since Obama made a speech. But let's talk about that May 23rd speech that he made that people felt was maybe pivotal. Do you want to go there?
Sure. Well, you know, President Obama waited some time before making any kind of statement about Guantanamo after the hunger strike started. And in April, at a news conference, he, you know, eloquently explained why the prison was so awful. And in his, you know, major speech on national security on May the 23rd, when he spoke about a lot of issues, but also about Guantanamo, he again was, you know, extraordinarily eloquent about what's wrong with the prison, why its existence is so appalling. But, you know, we have yet to see action on certain promises that he made. Now, he promised that he would appoint new envoys in the State Department and the Pentagon to deal with the transfer of prisoners. So, you know, as I mentioned, over half of the 166 men still held have been cleared for release by a task force over 3 years ago. And they're stuck because of this, primarily because of obstruction from Congress, but also from President Obama's unwillingness to push the issue. Part of the problem was that he imposed a ban on releasing any prisoners from the Yemen after there was a failed bomb plot by a Nigerian man recruited in Yemen on Christmas Day 2009. And President Obama, in response to the outrage that greeted that attack, imposed a ban on releasing any of the cleared prisoners from Yemen, even though 56 of these 86 men are from Yemen. So in his speech, he promised to lift that ban. Now, you know, that actually is significant, but Congress has also imposed restrictions on the release of prisoners, essentially to any country they regard as dangerous, and the Yemen is one.
Well, and I believe that Congress is currently debating the National Defense Authorization Act, and in that there is a ban again on Yemen. There's a whole bunch of amendments being put forward, many of them that would once again attempt to restrict Obama's ability to transfer men out.
Well, that's right, Linda, but, you know, he also does have a secret weapon that he rarely talks about, which is that a waiver was specifically included in the legislation. I know that Senator Carl Levin, the chair of the Armed Services Committee, was part of implementing this in the legislation.
Well, I wanted to ask you, that's my point, is he has these methods. So he does this speech that sounds like he wants to close Guantanamo, but he doesn't put in an envoy. He doesn't name an envoy. Nobody's even heard any speculation on who one might be since then, and this was May 23rd. Conditions have actually gotten worse. There are more people on hunger strike. There are more people being force-fed and more people being hospitalized. So, and he did send a couple senators and a White House assistant, a McDonough or someone, to Guantanamo just last week. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
But who he sent was, I think, interesting, McCain and Feinstein. And, you know, I don't know if you recall, but it was McCain and Warner who went in and said, now, we're gonna stop this Patriot Act. We're not going to let them, you know, do illegal things to Americans. And they went in and made a deal to make sure that nobody who knew about what they were doing would get prosecuted. In other words, they just went in to cover their ass. So he sent these two people, Feinstein and McCain, to Guantanamo. But I'm thinking maybe this is all just a smokescreen. What do you think?
I'm not sure it's entirely a smokescreen. I think John McCain, you know, at a certain level would like to see Guantanamo closed, but only by transferring prisoners to the U.S. mainland And then prosecuting and possibly continuing to hold some of them. It would shift the conversation in a new direction. It would at least be some kind of movement. But it's hard to say, really. Politicians, you know, tend to be untrustworthy characters in that, you know, that what they say isn't necessarily what they mean, or that they might mean it, but then they'll find that the political sands are shifting in a certain direction and they'll change their minds.
Well, and that, I also wonder if they did close Guantanamo and transfer prisoners to one of these new CMU units the feds are developing, which are basically solitary confinement prisons intended to keep high-level, you know, dangerous prisoners. I wonder if that wouldn't be worse for these prisoners, to be quite honest, because they could be separated and kept out of public eye in a much easier way and,
well, and
without one focus.
I know what you mean, Linda, but the issue there would be that these are men who have never been tried or convicted of any crimes. Now, on the U.S. mainland, that will certainly cause problems for a lot of people involved in the legal profession and anyone concerned with questions of legality and ethics. I think that it would lead to new legal challenges being possible. But that's because I don't think that it can be taken for granted that a facility that is demonstrably on the U.S. mainland rather than that funny game that's involved with Guantanamo, that it would be possible to deprive people of their liberty under any circumstances without establishing that you have a good reason for doing so. But, you know, we're obviously not at that point yet. We're still at the point where we can't even get prisoners released from Guantanamo, that the president's own responsible interagency task force said the United States no longer wanted to hold. And that's where, you know, the secret weapon I mentioned, the waiver in the legislation in the National Defense Authorization Act, is so important. It will cost President Obama political capital to bypass Congress. He will get opposition from Republicans. In the short term, it may be that it won't be good for his polling or that of the Democratic Party, because the majority of the American people don't care about what's happening to the prisoners at Guantanamo. But he can do it. He and the Defense Secretary are allowed, through the legislation, to say, this is a matter of national security and we can't have Congress obstructing the necessity of releasing people from Guantanamo.
And there's been...
It looks to me as though he's going to need to do that, Linda. You know, it's 3 weeks since he made the speech, so that's where I'm wondering, you know, when are we going to see action?
Yes, I understand. And I want to let the audience know that this is Linda Olson Osterlund with A Deeper Look on KBOO Community Radio. And I'm talking to Andy Worthington, author and journalist from London. Andy, when I look at the situation that's going on there, I noticed that there's been more international response. So can you talk a little bit about that? The EU Parliament came out with a statement, and I believe that's the first time they've come out in opposition to Guantanamo.
Well, I mean, actually, I think that they have kind of regularly made statements, you know, deploring the situation at Guantanamo.
I think what we just don't hear about them over here.
Well, no, and I have to say that within Europe, it's not necessarily reported very much either. I think what's significant since, you know, since the hunger strike really came to light in March, and, you know, and I have to say that for a sustained two-month period until President Obama made his speech, it really was a significant news story internationally and even within parts of the U.S. media. You know, I now think that it's wandered off the radar a little, and I'm concerned that people don't lose interest because President Obama hasn't actually done anything yet. But, you know, what happened in that period was that he got a more sustained amount of criticism than he has received at all since he became president on these issues. So, you know, the International Committee of the Red Cross spoke out. The United Nations particularly were very critical. You know, he had the European Parliament talking about it. He had people within Congress starting to say, okay, we need to look at this issue again. It's not acceptable, the status quo that we have. You know, so we had Carl Levin, we had Dianne Feinstein, we've had John McCain saying things. These are all things that are going in the right direction. But I think it is significant that there was so much criticism. And I just fear the way that the news goes these days, that people will move on and then we'll, you know, we'll be back to square one. So I'm hoping that the things that we're not necessarily hearing about that much, there are certainly things happening behind the scenes that they're significant. But, you know, we need him to free somebody, and we need him to do that soon. And we need him to appoint these envoys that he promised so that they can stand up and say what they're going to do and formulate ways of actually dealing with it.
You know, I guess I'll be honest with you, Andy. I'm a little bit more cynical. I've watched this man become the perfect emperor for the oligarchy that rules our country and much of the world. And I think he can speak so eloquently. But I was I read that whole speech. I put it down, and I every paragraph had an untruth or a euphemism that covered up a truth or a misdirection. And he is so eloquent in the way that he speaks that I believe that's had a huge impact on why the anti-war movement is not, strong like it should be here, because many people voted for him, and it's hard to go out against a person that you have said you voted for. But here, I think the progressive and the independent media are now turning their focus, and rightly, to, you know, the revelations that Edward Snowden made about the spying that's been rampant, and how he revealed so much new about the depth and breadth of the U.S. surveillance state. So I agree with you. There's always this risk that when something goes on and on like this, it can fade from news because very important news really comes about, or else because the mainstream media turns its back. However, yeah, this hunger strike is not going to end, I don't believe. And with it already at its 128th day, I hate to say this, but we're certainly got to be risking fatalities.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I have to say, you know, the monstrous truth about Guantanamo when it comes to force-feeding prisoners is that they have demonstrated a great ability to actually keep people alive who are being force-fed. There is one of the men who's on the hunger strike being force-fed, has been force-fed since they first brought over the restraint chairs where they tie the prisoners up. And then put the tubes down their noses into their stomachs. The restraint chairs were used to break the most resistant hunger strikers during the massive prison-wide hunger strike in the summer of 2005. The chairs were brought to Guantanamo in January 2006, and after a little while of those being used, there were only three men left on a hunger strike. Two of those men are still in Guantanamo. And one of them, I believe, has consistently been force-fed since that time. He's still alive. I don't know how on earth his body manages to cope with that. I know from his lawyer that this man has not been destroyed mentally by what has happened to him, but I can't. I find it difficult to envisage what kind of state he must be in. But, you know, he and some of the other longer-term hunger strikers are proof that they can manage to keep these people alive.
I can only imagine that for that man that you were talking about, that the sense that he is able to continue to resist is what keeps him alive even. I mean, it's an antidote to the despair.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think
action,
you know,
always helps blow away despair. Taking action works.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to former prisoners who decided in Guantanamo that they would resist. You know, some people become compliant when they're faced with that kind of situation. Other people decide that they're not going to take it. I think, you know, depending on who you are and how you work, there are different ways of doing things. So I presume that you're right, that this has become the focus of his existence, is this perpetual act of resistance. But it's shocking to realize that he has been held for so long and this terrible stuff is happening to him for so long when, you know, above all, this is a man who has never been charged with anything, has never been tried for anything, has never been convicted of anything, has never been allowed to call himself a soldier, if that's what he was, and be held according to the Geneva Conventions. He's still essentially a prisoner without any rights, like all the men at Guantanamo. They can't be freed from that prison unless somebody in power does something extraordinary.
And that's what we need to be pushing for. So let's talk a little bit about the actions that have been going on. There was a full-page ad raised up for the New York Times. Is that correct?
Sure.
Talk a little bit about the kinds of actions that have been going on and who's been participating in them in the protest front.
Well, you know, I know there have been various forms of protest taking place in the United States. I mean, that was an initiative of the World Can't Wait, was the full page ad in the New York Times, which I know gained a lot of supporters, a lot of and I think got quite a lot of coverage. There have been hunger strikes in solidarity with the prisoners that have been conducted by the activists of Witness Against Torture.
I will mention a couple hunger strikers here that have gone on hunger strike for different lengths of time in solidarity with them. There's Martha Gies, who's an exceptional author here in Portland, and she went on hunger strike for Holy Week, the week of Holy Week, if you're in that religion, and wrote about it for a front page article on our local street paper called Street Roots for people who are homeless. And then there's also Brian Wilson, famous as a Vietnam War activist who had his legs cut off when he was protesting on a train. He's also been on an ongoing fast, I believe, in support of the Guantanamo prisoners.
Yeah. And it's very good to hear about these acts of solidarity.
Yeah, and that's why I bring them up, because we need to know that there are people all over that are taking meaningful action.
Well, I think what's been the most extraordinary this time, the most extraordinary situation, has been the number of people who were prepared to acknowledge what was happening at Guantanamo and say that it was wrong. And that's, you know, the number of signatories to some petitions that have been launched, and two of the big ones are still ongoing, one at change.org and one at Avaaz.
Say that again, one at change.org, so people can go there.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
Avaaz.
Say that. Spell it.
Avaaz.
Okay, thank you.
And you can find links to those. Actually, if you go to the closeguantanamo.org website, there are links right on the homepage there. But those two petitions have secured nearly 1 million signatures. Now, you know, signatures on petitions don't solve anything. They alert the authorities to the fact that people are thinking about something. They should always, I think, be the starting point for action, and that, you know, actual action is needed as a result. But, you know, throughout Guantanamo's history, it has never been conceivable that there would be 1 million people signing a petition calling for the closure of the prison. It just hasn't happened.
That's really, it's amazing
before.
And it's very heartening.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely is. It shows that there is an awareness of it. So I think, you know, what we're now hopefully trying to do is to keep people mobilized and exert pressure, because I absolutely share your deep cynicism about this president and his party, Linda. You know, mm-hmm. He has proven eloquent at saying the right things and not backing them up with any action that fulfills the meaning of his words, and that's, you know, that's shocking, and he does it time and time again.
And I hear people say he's a really good man. I don't like what he's doing, but he's a really good man. And I just wonder at what point, how many deaths and how many, you know, abuses, how many, you know, throwing out the Constitution he has to do before. What does good mean? I'm sure
he is
nice to his children and he's intelligent.
Yeah, no, it means nothing, but that's that's unfortunately the reality of, maybe that's part of the problem, is how politics are being perceived by far too many people, is that it's done on this kind of personality basis, as though you can separate the personality from the policy.
Well, and actually, on the left here, there's some number of people who tend to believe that he is, we're about to run out of time, that he's being forced to make these decisions. But I think there's very little evidence to indicate that. Andy Worthington, we are running out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to tell my audience?
Well, I'd just love for your audience to carry on being educated on this issue, and to tell people that they know that how important it is that the rule of law is restored to the United States, and that involves Guantanamo being closed. Please visit my website, andyworthington.co.uk, to find out more. I've been writing about this online for 6 years now, and there's a wealth of information there.
You have a wonderful website with ongoing blogs. You write prolifically. Thank you so much for joining us today on
Thank
A Deeper
you,
Look. You're welcome. And I want to let people know to tune in next week, June 19th, on Wednesday, for Political Perspectives. I'll be interviewing another Brit journalist. Her name is Victoria Brittain, and she's the author of Shadow Lives, The Forgotten Women of the War on Terror. She's going to talk to us about a recent article that she has published that's catching a lot of attention. So please do tune in. That's next Wednesday at 9 o'clock right here on KBOO.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Good morning, about a minute before 10 o'clock. And coming up in about an hour from now on Between the Covers, host Sarika Mehta interviews Khaled Hosseini about his new book, And the Mountains Echoed, a multi-generational novel that follows its characters around the globe. And then at 11:30 today, it's Words and Pictures. Editorial cartoonist Jack Oman spent nearly three decades at the Oregonian. We'll hear his talk at the Oregon Historical Society about art, politics, and the allure of the Pacific Northwest. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Chris Andre and Air Cascadia is not on the schedule this morning. Instead, we have an hour-long edition of Flashpoints, and that is coming up next on KBOO.
Particles on the Wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the Wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the Wall.
May 3rd through June 14th. Second floor gallery in the EcoTrust building.
Particles on the Wall.
Co-sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and KBOO Community Radio.
Particles on the Wall.
Information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.